Sandra, and Noah.
Hello, 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 and welcome back to the Theater World Podcast. My name's Noah Bender.
And I'm Sandra Nemchak.
And our guest today is a Chicago theater critic, host, and creator of the podcast The Sunset Project, a detailed history of the mega musical Sunset Boulevard, and a TikTok icon. Please welcome Broadway Bob Bullen.
Hey there. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for having me. This is a lot of fun.
We're so excited to have you. Like, this is like a dream come true for us.
I just noticed you have a Cats movie poster in your background.
Oh, of course.
That speaks a lot about how much I trust you. So
you're in good company. I'm Andrew Lloyd Webber is my favorite composer. I'm wearing my Starlight Express shirt. You're in good company today.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Well, let's just dive right in. I mean, you are known as a Broadway commentator, Andrew Lloyd Webber fan, Patti LuPone super fan, and I'd say probably the biggest fan of Sunset Boulevard on the internet.
Aren't you Norma Desmond? You used to be in pictures. You used to be big.
I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
With one look.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, there are a lot of rabid fans of Sunset Boulevard. I'm just the one who was crazy enough to make a podcast about it. But believe me, I've gotten a lot of emails from people who are much more, I think, have been much more entrenched in the show than I have. But yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I just had
there's always a level of fandom that goes above your own, right?
Yeah, I had just a conversation the other day. I sent your podcast to somebody, and he was like, oh, he's only giving Patti LuPone's side. And I was like, well, that's the only side that kind of really matters.
I know. I want to know what the other side of that story is.
I don't know it.
Sure, it's biased. I get it, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen a pattern of that, right?
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Listening to your podcast, The Sunset Project, it seems really clear that this show, Sunset Boulevard the Musical, has been so crucial in like your development as a person. Can you talk about how it kind of shaped you as a person? Like, it seems so pivotal in your life experience.
Well, I think this question is really meaningful right now because I am home for a little bit and I'm sitting in my childhood bedroom, the bedroom I grew up in, where all of my love of theater like really stemmed. And you can't see because I have a virtual background, but over in the closet here, I have like a hand-drawn colored pencil rendering of the original show logo for Sunset Boulevard in my closet, which I don't know symbolically what that means.
In my closet. In the closet, yes.
I know. I have both, like my mother has thrown out most of my stuff, but because she's trying to clean up the house because I'm 42 years old, I don't live here. But sure. There's like jewel cases for the original world premiere cast recording and the American premiere cast recording for Sunset Boulevard in the closet as well. So like this show like had an imprint on me. I don't know why. Well, I kind of know why, but there's a whole podcast about it. It's one of those shows that I think, you know, the show that you latch onto as a kid. Like, what is that thing that we all have that show, right? And this happened to be my show. And I think it was because it was the new Andrew Lloyd Webber musical. Andrew Lloyd Webber was the gateway theater drug for many of us, especially of my generation with Cats and with Phantom.
For me, it was Cats.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. So you're like, what is the next show? And you see this one and you're like, what is it about? I had never seen the movie. I had only listened to the cast recording. Fun fact, I only listened to the first act for like probably the first month because I was really into like, I don't know, the first act.
It's got all the fun songs.
All the fun songs. Like, the second act gets like dark and I'm like, I don't know. And then I realize what happens at the end and I'm like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's hard to get the full picture just by listening to it. But all the Sunset Boulevard soundtracks are like 2.5 hours long, so you get most of it anyway.
You need all that dialogue, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And my first exposure was the Glenn Close cast recording, which is like a radio play, the way they recorded it. Mm-hmm. It has all the dialogue. It's two beautifully produced albums, and I guess it latched on to me. And it's not only the show, but then I started hearing about all of the stuff behind the scenes that we all kind of learn as like theater queens. We hear all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And as I was getting older, and especially over the past 3 years, I'm learning more about like how theater treats people and like the equity in theater. Mm-hmm. All of the stuff that seemed like catty drama and like stuff that was exciting and scintillating was really like emotional abuse for a lot of people. So I try to really do that in a thoughtful way around what happened behind the scenes without really making it, without trying to sensationalize it too much, but really talk about the human side of what was happening behind the scenes to all of the people who devoted a big chunk of their lives to making something special. And it was the last big mega musical of our time. After Sunset Boulevard, a lot of the mega musicals as we knew them, the big imports from Britain to America, that was the show that kind of put the nail in the coffin. So,
yeah, Sunset Boulevard is definitely a good kind of touchstone point in musical theater, because it's such, I mean, it's a major, huge show, and all the drama behind it is emblematic of a lot of things that are going on in theater, but it just happens to be centering two of the most important people in musical theater history, Andrew Lloyd Webber and Patti LuPone.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
Speaking of Patti LuPone.
Yes, go ahead.
I was like going to say, when did your obsession with her become with Sunset Boulevard, or was it before?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to understand where that all... I have a few moments where I realized where I discovered who she was. And there's a moment where I discovered who she was, and then when I fell in love with her, were kind of two different moments in a way. And I think I discovered who she was when I was listening to... So it's Sunset Boulevard related. And there was this TV channel. This is a bit of a wandering story, but go with me. There was a TV channel in our hometown that like played like bulletins. It just was like screens that had like the fish fry at the church is on Friday night. And like while it played these like these screens, it had music in the background. And on like Fridays, it played, they played Broadway music. Whoever was like in charge of that, my small hometown in Northern Michigan, did that. And I remember I would just have it in this background music. This is before the internet, really, before like streaming services.
Social media. Yeah.
Social media. And then this version of As If We Never Said Goodbye came on with Patti, but I didn't know who it was. I'm like, who is this voice? What is this voice singing this song? And then I put two and two together and realized it was the mother from Life Goes On. And I was like, oh, that's cool that someone who like I knew as an actor also can sing really well. And then it wasn't until I was at a cast party, I was in a really, really janky production of The Music Man, where I played a constable and a dancing townsboy.
Beautiful.
And and we were up in like the apartments like of this theater company watching old Tony Award performances, and the guy who directed our production, Music Man, put on to educate all of us young kids, like, here's your theater history. He put on the 1988 Tony Awards, which had Phantom, which had Into the Woods, which had Anything Goes with Patti LuPone. And he played that, her performance, and I was like, that. Like, that is it for
anything
me.
Anything Goes.
I know. Her Tony Award performance is what did it for me. So then I found the record, the album at the library, taped it to a cassette tape, and that was and that was my soundtrack for, I think, my 15th year was just the recorded cassette tape of the album. Stranger Things,
they would play that song while you're in the Upside Down world.
Yes.
It's unlock your true memories.
That was it. That was it for me. So yeah, it's one of those things where I've been a fan of her since I was 15 years old, and she's been a constant in my life in a weird sort of meandering way.
How many times have you seen her?
I tried to count it up, and I think I've seen her over around 60 times.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's probably like every time she's come through.
Yeah, and she used to do a lot of stuff in Chicago before she There was a moment in the early 2000s where she was kind of like, wasn't doing a lot of stage work, was doing a lot of concert work, and she came to Ravinia, which is a concert venue outside of Chicago, and saw her do a lot of stuff there. And it was also the season of the Sondheim festivals that they did at Ravinia, which you may have heard about, where they did like, every year they did like concerts, fully staged concerts with like Audra McDonald, Patti, George Hearn, and Michael Cerveris, and they would do these beautiful stage concerts that did Sweeney Todd, Into the Woods, Passion with Patti, Anyone Can Whistle with her and Michael Cerveris, Gypsy. Yeah, it was a really fun production. Audra was in it too. She played Nurse Faye Apple.
That's that the young love interest?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is like 2005, 2006.
You know, when Audra was in her prime.
I know. We've all grown up. And then they did, that's where Gypsy got its start before she got her chance to do it on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was funny because, like, Bernadette Peters did it, like, maybe 4 years before that. And then they were like, Patty.
I was really close. Yeah, it was, you know, and there's the whole story there that most people who are fans of Patty know around why she couldn't do that production. Arthur mm-hmm. Lawrence said,
what is it? I don't know this story.
You don't know the story?
No.
It's another fun story around just the foibles of Broadway. So do you know who Arthur Lawrence is? He wrote the book.
Yeah, the playwright and director.
Yeah. He was famously a curmudgeon, famously held grudges. Patty had just gotten done with Sunset Boulevard, was very burned by the business, was very apprehensive about what projects she'd take on. And she got offered to do this play that Arthur Lawrence had written and was going to direct called Jolson Sings Again. It was about like...
Al Jolson?
It was about, not Al Jolson, but it was about some trial that I don't quite understand. Some like footnote in history mm-hmm. that was about like the trial and about some, it was like a play. It was a straight dramatic play that he had written. And the producers, I might get some of the details wrong here, but the producers were only going to produce it out of town if Patty was attached to the project. So he really wanted her to do it. And she read the play, wasn't super jazzed about it, and then got the offer, and she said it was insulting, and she turned it down. Ooh. And then the whole thing fell apart. So, like, the whole production, like, the producers wouldn't produce it. The out-of-town tryout never happened. And Arthur Lawrence called Patty up because he was so pissed at her and said, you will never be allowed to do any of my shows, including Gypsy, or blacklisted from doing that show. Any major production of Gypsy you cannot do. And she said it, like... It destroyed her. He yelled at her, told her that she was a horrible person, and like hung up the phone. So she just basically said, well, I'm never going to do that role. So she moved on with her life. And then Wells Kaufman, who was the artistic director at Ravinia, when they were doing the Sondheim series, said that you should really do Gypsy. And she was afraid she couldn't do it, but there was nothing in there around doing a staged concert. It was about first-class productions. So she did this concert of Gypsy, which is basically a fully staged production.
Yeah, you can do that show as a concert.
Yeah, but it was like fully staged. There was like an orchestra in the background, but there were sets, there were costumes, there were wigs. It was like, there were no books. It was like a production of Gypsy. And then she got great reviews, and that was directed by Lonnie Price. And then Arthur Lawrence, cut to like a year later, his husband of many years was on his deathbed. And according to theatrical lore, his husband said to Arthur, like, I want you to continue going on after I pass. I want you to direct Gypsy with Patti LuPone.
His dying words.
Please. His husband. And so then, and counter to that, there was rumors of a production of Gypsy that was being revived. And Patti's agent, as well as, I think Scott Rudin.
Wonderful.
Wow. Told Patty to call Arthur and come to Jesus. So she called Arthur and apologized, and he just went right into like what this production is going to be about. Like he just like let it go under the table, and then from that point on, they got to do Gypsy. But she was blacklisted, and then all of these the things of fate happened, and then like 8 years after the Bernadette Peters revival, they did this revival.
Did you get to see her in that one?
I saw her do it at City Center because it was there mm-hmm. before it went to Broadway. It played at City Center for a month. So I saw it then, but I never got back to see it on Broadway, which was my biggest regrets. But I did see her after the show at City Center. She sat next to us and I bought her martini after the show.
Oh, yes. I remember hearing about your story.
Yeah, and then she yelled at me. So we've had a history. But yeah, that was a fun little footnote about, I think, one of those theatrical things that I love that people know about, because Arthur Lawrence was a genius, but also quite he knew how to hold a grudge. That's for sure.
And Patti LuPone is dramatic on stage and off.
Exactly.
Rose got to have her turn.
Exactly. Yes.
I mean, it seems just like Patti LuPone has been enmeshed in all of these huge major conflicts that are, you know, she's considered a diva, you know, blah, 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 capital D diva. But none of this really seems to be stemming from things that are her fault or her demands, or it's all kind of happening around her to her. She's kind of like the victim in a lot of these stories, but is kind of painted in the press to be difficult.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just the lore of like a powerful woman. We don't like a powerful woman who sticks up for themselves. And I think she's also one of the few people in our industry who is like a theatrical stage icon. We don't have many of those anymore. We have Bernadette Peters. We have Patty. We have Sutton Foster to a degree.
Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah. But these like people who have made their entire career on the stage who are still working today and still have relevancy. It's she's one of the last in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that with that, a lot of lore follows her in terms of what has created this iconic status.
Yeah, and very true. It's like this whole thing, the drama behind everything that happened to her, and you know, hearing that she was so difficult, but then you meet her in real life and she's really nice. And it's like,
I mean, I think I don't think she's mean, and I don't think she's like super nice. I think she's a person. I think she knows, like, this is me, like, I've never really met her beyond, like, maybe in my entire life of being a fan of hers, I probably have spent a cumulative 2 minutes with her. But I think she strikes me as someone who just doesn't put up with bullshit, you know? And I think the moment that... She's been through it all. And I think people, there's a certain degree of, like, political correctness or, like, just, like, letting things go under, like, just letting things roll off her back, you know? And I don't think she's capable of that. Which I think can burn her in some ways. I've heard through the grapevine that her biggest drawback of her success is that she isn't very savvy in how she holds grudges or who she talks to about stuff. So like, she doesn't really think about, like, you look at Bernadette Peters, for example. I'm sure she has grudges with a lot of people, but she doesn't tell anyone. She just keeps it to herself.
She just slinks away. She's like, ooh.
She's like, oh, it's great. It's perfect.
I mean, with Patty, I've never heard of any other actor, you know, stopping the show to reprimand an audience member because they have their cell phone out or because they're not wearing a mask. Like all these things that she can not get away with, but it's like things that she's kind of known for, celebrated for, that only she could do, that she has the power to do.
I think that, well, I've heard like Patrick Stewart's done it a few times, you know, like, there's been like male stage actors that have done it, you know,
but not as legendary,
but not women. And when women, I think, speak out, you know, and not as legendary, sure. But I think she has kind of created her own legend over the past. This whole cell phone mask thing is a relatively new phenomenon for her and her like stardom. Right. You know, she wasn't always that type of person. And it was like not until maybe about 10 years ago that this was now become also part of her
identity.
But
she's the person associated with that. But it's awesome. It's not like annoying or anything. It's like, you go, Patty. Like, she's the one to do that.
Yeah.
She doesn't care anymore. She's like, I don't care what you think about me. I'm just going to say what I want to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you watch the whole thing? Did you, you've heard about the Chris Harper pays my salary thing?
Yeah. You don't pay my salary. Yeah.
It's interesting if you watch because they just released the whole talk back that whole thing came out of. Uh-huh. So like they had a talk back after company and it's like 40 minutes in a two-parter on YouTube and they released it the other day and they cut out that moment where that happens in the talk. But you can see from the moment she walks out on stage, she's coming in hot. Like she's not coming up with any shit. And like everyone in the audience is like eagle-eyeing them. Like she's giving sass back to the moderator for the Q&A. Like she is just ready.
I got somewhere to go.
She's eating Cheez-Its while people are talking. And she's just like,
she's already had her vodka stingers.
Oh yeah.
She made everyone a cocktail before they came out. They all had a cocktail in their hand. So she was ready.
And one for Mahler.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. So when you started doing Patti LuPone like impersonations, was that just a TikTok thing or when did you start doing that?
What's new for the sad eyes of blue? I wanna say I'm just a little stuck on you, you'll be on me too. I get up here for the sad eyes. Stand back, you wanna know what you're gonna get at me? Just a little touch of star quality.
I've been doing it since I was 16, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we all have our little stupid things that we do, and I didn't really do it out loud. Like, and I haven't really done it in a public forum since TikTok. You know, I was just doing it for fun. And then you know, there are people who do it much better than I do.
There's like, so many Patty impersonators on TikTok. Like, I feel like the Broadway TikTok sphere, there's so many people just doing like, if Patty LuPone sang Cardi B, or if Patty LuPone sang in Wicked, like.
I know. It's fun. And then like Jonathan Hoover is one of my favorites. I can't remember the guy's name, Sean. He's recently got
the guy who does Inappropriate
the
Patty.
Young guy, right?
Inappropriate Patty is Jonathan Hoover, and he's fantastic. And then Sean, I can't remember
the guy who's in Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice, yeah, he's great too. I love what he does. I consider them like the younger Patty. I'm more like Patty as we know her today. Because I am a baritone, and she's kind of become a baritone as she's gotten older.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that, you know, I just been doing since I was 16 in my childhood bedroom.
You know, Xandra's got her Carol Channing doll. We should get you a Patty LuPone ventriloquist doll.
I know. Where did you get your Carol? How did you start developing your Carol Channing?
Well, Carol Channing, I've been obsessed with since like a little kid. I watched, you know, the Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Yes.
Like, yes. And so I was like, who is this woman? She is so strange, but I love her so much.
Jan tomorrow, Jan yesterday.
But and then
never,
on,
ever Jan today.
You know, searching like, cause like YouTube was pretty big, and I was searching songs, and then all of a sudden I was like, I don't know, maybe there's like puppets out there or something. So I went on like puppets, and I would like Liza Minnelli puppet, nothing. I don't know, like puppets, Carol Channing puppet, and I found it on eBay, and I was like, perfect. And then I brought it to summer camp, like theater summer camp, and every then I would just be like, okay, here's my Carol Channing, and now all the children know who Carol Channing is.
Good for you.
My first time experiencing the Carol Channing puppet was, so like we were at the same, you know, theater summer camp, and one day before like a tech rehearsal or something, we were all like at IHOP or something, just a bunch of like the kind of older people, and you had the Carol Channing doll, and we were just waiting for our table, and you were just going up to
first outing.
Yeah, you were just going up to like the other people waiting for their tables and being like, "Hello, how's it going? I'm Carol Channing," like, and just interacting with them, even like behind a wall or something, and holding it out. Like,
I think I was singing "Anything Goes" because we were doing "Anything Goes."
Yes, yes.
So I was like, "Oh, Gabriel."
We would have been such best friends.
Oh, for sure. We could still be best friends.
Oh, I love it. I love it. No, I have you seen the Julie Klausner short video with Carol Channing, the Carol Channing marionette or ventriloquist doll?
No.
I gotta send you this link. It is a classic.
Is it the one where she sings about her diamonds? No, that's another Carol Channing.
No, it's Julie Klausner.
I woke up with my diamonds on, but that's like a puppet.
Yeah. No, this is the same. This is the same one you have, but Julie Klausner does a short independent movie that's on YouTube that's been around for like 15 years.
Oh my gosh,
it's quite funny. Yeah.
Yeah, she's just kind of just an extension of my arm.
I love it.
My right arm is complete again.
Yes.
Noah, do you do any impressions?
I do Carol Channing. I do Adam Pascal.
Really?
There was this, I was just singing in the car the other day, and Elaborate Lives from Aida came on. And what's that one line where he goes, like, I love when he kind of switches the timbre of his voice. He goes like, we don't know, like, whose words are true.
Yeah, like, this is a rocker musical now.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, I was talking about this recently with Xandra, but I stumbled upon the Adam Pascal Anthony Rapp acoustic concert album. They did like a 20 Years of Friendship concert at Studio 54 or something a few years ago, where they sang, you know, all their songs from Rent, and then a bunch of songs to get separately, all on acoustic. And Adam Pascal does an acoustic cover of Memory from Cats.
What?
But it's incomprehensible because he completely changes the melody. Like, he, you know, he takes some artistic license on it, but it's like, Memory, all alone in the moonlight. Like, it's so weird. It's bizarre. Like, it kind of starts out as you know, he's, you know, he's putting his own little spin on it, but then he just goes off.
Doesn't even know the real tune. That's the honest truth.
But of course, this memory, like, it's he's yeah. Got to put his
labyrinth.
Yeah, he's like soft rock whisper on it.
Yes, yes. Oh, I love it. It's like it's almost as disorienting as when there's an audio bootleg of Patty singing Memory, which I thought never existed.
That'd be Mamory.
Yeah. She filled in for, I think, Cole Wilkinson or something when there was like a tour of Andy Bieber. It was like Memory. It was like flipping up in a head voice all the time for no reason. All alone in the moon. And they're like, why? But it's on YouTube. It's very, and she sings it super fast. Like, the song is maybe 30 seconds by the time she gets done with it.
Yeah, I was
into this too. Music.
my grandpa is also a bit of a singer. He's like a more operatic guy, and he knows that I love Cats. And one time I made some video of myself singing Memory for some event or whatever, and he sent me a recording of him just like singing Memory just because he wanted to, but he did it. It, you know, Memory's a waltz, but he did it as a march. It was so funny, like. I don't think it was intentional, but my grandpa just sent me this wonderful audio recording over email of him going like, Memory, all alone in the moonlight, I can smile at the old days, I was beautiful then, just like super like,
sun.
Yes, but yeah, very like tenor operatic, but in.
That's fantastic. I think that if I ever revive Cats, I will have him sing Memory.
Yes, there we go. We need a Grisabella. We need gender swapping all around, everywhere. We don't even need it.
Yes, swap old Deuteronomy and Grisabella and we'll have a show.
I'd be here for it.
So what was it about Cats that made you, like, your show, your entry point?
I grew up watching the 1998 DVD.
Yes.
Which is the quintessential version of Cats. That's exactly how it should look.
That's how it should be.
And I just love, I like bizarre stuff. I just like the music. Like, it's just catchy, fun. Like, it just makes me really happy. I love the dancing. The costumes are so unique. Like, I get that, like, so many people have problems with Cats. And, you know, there's a lot of people who just can't get past how it looks. And I get that because it's creepy, it's bizarre, it's unlike anything that's ever been on stage. But that's one of the reasons why I think it's so special. I mean, if I'm getting, you know, reflective and analytical, I think liking Cats is a bit of associating Cats with, you know, my favorite musical. It's a bit contrarian. It's not that many people like it. It's a bit unique about me or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was more of, you know, a kind of a personality thing.
Yeah.
I just love it. Like, me and my sister grew up watching it on road trips. Like, we would have like a little DVD player in the back of the car when we would like drive from
Cats only.
Yeah, no, seriously. We would like drive down to LA a bunch and just watch Cats and like sing it together. So it's like our favorite musical together, me and my younger sister. And we finally got the opportunity to see it together like a couple months ago when it was on tour, and it was fantastic. It was such a nice experience of just kind of geeking out together and kind of noticing all the little details and differences. Ooh, they cut that verse from that song. Ooh, they moved that song to the second act.
Yeah.
Ooh, they added a little prelude to this song. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
There's so many intricacies. Cause
do you like Cats, Bob?
Oh, I love Cats.
Oh, great. Right.
It was my first Broadway musical I ever saw as a kid.
It's a great weird entry point for people.
It is. I mean, it was one of those moments that made me fall in love with theater. I've talked about this ad nauseum. My friend always jokes about, like, do you talk about Cats all the time? but it was the moment where when I was 11 years old and we were at the Winter Garden Theater in New York, and when the overture started, I was like, it was like a chemical alteration happened in my brain at that moment. I was like, what is happening?
And
I was thrilled the whole time. The entire time I was thrilled. And that joy that happened when I was watching Cats, I still think about it to this day. Yeah. It was so magical to me.
Because
my gateway musical was definitely Phantom. But before that, I watched the musical Showboat over and over and over at a three years old. I'd be like, Mommy, let's rent a movie. Oh, Showboat. It's like, okay.
Showboat is so long.
I don't know why, but I loved it. I was like, fish gotta swim and birds gotta fly. You know,
it's got some bops.
3-year-olds.
Yep. It's got some bops.
Yeah. But yeah, Phantom of the Opera was my gateway musical theater. So we are all Andrew Lloyd Webber fan-ish.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're
we can critique him. We can
despite
like him.
All of his things he has that are going on with him right now. He was a big moment of our upbringing, of our formulative taste making.
Yeah, I mean, and recently, you know, Cinderella just gets this like whole slap in the face and the letter, and you commented on it, and I was just like, oh, good, you know, like I love that you're bringing things to light and talking about news articles that some people just don't have time to read.
Yeah, I mean, that whole Cinderella thing was so fascinating because it's like, it's exactly what happened in Sunset Boulevard, how we treated the cast, how he was more concerned about the bottom line. And how versus how he treats the people that make him his money. And that's been a running thread through a lot of his shows, I think, in terms of like, they're just focused on ego and not about empathy with everyone and who's impacted by the decision. And then he gets all gaslighty and like, oh no, that I didn't mean it that way. I didn't intend it that way. Yeah. And what losing happened money. with Cinderella, we all saw it happen. Like, I think he forgot that social media was a thing and that like, all the people on the show could comment on this. It wasn't like back in the day where everyone just kind of sat in their little corner and Rug operated and pulled all the strings. Right. No, there's a whole other angle that people can learn about what's actually going on. So
he's truly the Phantom of the Opera.
But he's just a nice little grandpa playing any dream will do on the piano on TikTok.
Oh, yes.
I know.
Sit along with me.
It's so crazy. And I mean, I think with Andrew, it's one of those things. I think the letter that really got me. So in my podcast, I talk about how Patty had furiously scrapbooked all of her memories from the show. And they're all of
furiously.
The, yeah, furiously. Like they're
in the library, right?
I'm sorry?
They're in the New York library right now?
They're in the Rare Books and Manuscripts Library in Columbia University. Okay. So and there's like dozens of scrapbooks. For Sunset Boulevard, there's 5 volumes of scrapbooks.
Wow.
Where she's clipped every news item, every review, every like correspondence that came to her from.
She is evidence.
Everything, like plane tickets, it's all in there. So I like was spent hours flipping through it. And the one the one letter that really struck home to like what Andrew Webber's brain is like was after she got fired from the production and he treated her like crap, his business did. Glenn Close was taking the role over on Broadway. They needed someone to replace her in LA. Glenn Close was leaving the LA production going to Broadway. And Patty had just been fired. So this letter that's like sitting in her scrapbook is like from Andrew basically like saying, I'm sorry I had to end this way. You're a talented artist. I would love to work with you in the future. This isn't what I ever planned. I feel horrible. But just know it wasn't entirely my decision. And like, shut up. And then at the end of it, he says, oh, here's a funny idea. What if you, wouldn't it be so funny if you replaced Glenn Close in the LA production when she goes to Broadway? Wouldn't that be fun? Anyways, give it a thought. And I was like, what the hell, dude? Do you realize that he just is clueless about impact? Completely clueless.
He's such a polarizing figure. It's interesting how, you know, revered and respected he is, in the world of musical theater, yet there's so many of these private stories that surface where he's not seeing the scope of what he's doing.
I think it's also that the thing that's different is that, like between Sondheim and Anthony Weber, Anthony Weber has a production company. He has this rug entity where, like, it's much more
he controls
than
everything. Closer.
He's a businessman. Yeah. He owns a bunch of property, owns theaters. Sondheim didn't really do any of that. He just was an artist who, like, partnered and collaborated with other artists.
Within the system.
Yeah.
Within the system.
Weber became the system.
Yeah, he did. So I think there's a whole different aspect there in terms of he's not just a composer. He is an entity, right?
He's the greatest star of all.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Angela Lloyd Webber.
All right, well, let's get into our Theater World Lightning Round. We're going to ask you some, you know, quick questions about your tastes and your opinions. So, sure. Broadway Bob. I mean, we usually ask people who their favorite Broadway diva is, but I think we know the answer for you. what's your favorite Patti LuPone performance?
That's a good question. I would say that what she's doing in Company right now is probably her best work that I've seen her do. I think that she's been in the role enough time or that she's fully figured it out. She's one of those actors, I think, that really needs to, like, live in the role for a long time to kind of figure out stuff. And
is this her third time playing Joanne?
This is her third time. She did the concert with Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, yeah.
And Stephen Colbert. Then she did it in London, the same production, and now she brought it here with the same director and production team. So I think what she's doing in this production is really great. She's just, it's confident. It's a star moment. And she's doing some really great work. And then I think in terms of TV work, I think her best stuff is in when she was a guest star in Penny Dreadful, and she played a witch. And there's a whole episode devoted to one of the lead characters has a backstory, and the backstory is her with Patti LuPone's character who plays this.
So
witch.
You don't like her as the rabbi in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend? She's like singing.
That's cute. Yeah, yeah. Is that your favorite?
Oh, probably because it's so kitschy.
I mean, that was a fun moment. But I think that in the Penny Dreadful, she does some of her best dramatic work where she's not, it's a very touching storyline for her. I was surprised she didn't get nominated for an Emmy, and I'm like not being like a big fan. Like I'm pretty critical about, you know, people's work, and I don't say that she deserves to get an Emmy nomination just because she was on TV. And this performance in this episode was really strong work. So if you haven't seen it, you should check it out.
Yeah, YouTube. Definitely. I've seen some of the Patti Dreadful episodes, but I haven't gotten to that part.
She played two characters in that series. She played this witch, which was like a single episode storyline, and then she was in the final season as a recurring character, as another character.
All right. Well, what is the worst show you've ever seen?
So I used to review theater in Chicago, and I saw. For about 5 years, I reviewed for the Huffington Post and CBS Chicago and stuff like that. And so one year I saw like 150 shows or something like that. Wow. It was pretty crazy. And the one show, and I know I've seen a lot of stuff that I was like, like there's times where I go back just out of shits and giggles and go back and read some of the stuff I've written. And I don't remember seeing the show at all. Like, I have no memory of seeing these shows. Like, it's
blacked
bizarre.
It out. It was that traumatic, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one show that sticks out to me that I remember being like, what the hell? There was this national tour of a new musical of 101 Dalmatians. Mm-hmm. And the children played the dogs. And there were also real dogs on stage, which was a highlight. There were real Dalmatians. I think.
Was Glenn Close in it?
She was not in it. But all of the people who played humans were on stilts.
What?
And Rachel York was supposed to play Cruella de Vil. And if you don't know who Rachel York is, she's fantastic. But she backed out, or like she left the production mysteriously. And Sarah Gettelfinger, who's also very talented, got put in. No shade to Sarah Gettelfinger, but the night I saw it, I think Sarah maybe had like 2 hours of rehearsal on these stilts.
Oh, no.
And she's supposed to be like Cruella de Vil, like commanding the stage, but she just looked terrified on these stilts. And then all the other actors looked equally terrified. Like they weren't circus people. They were actors who just were on stilts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everyone looked terrified. The children were like not well directed. The dogs were running around the stage. The music wasn't great. It was this rare mix of terror for what's going on stage and like just, and just mediocrity. Altogether.
Did anyone fall?
No one fell, thank God. But
that's what I was expecting.
Yeah. But my husband loved it.
And your husband doesn't really like Broadway shows, right?
Sorry?
Your husband doesn't really do Broadway.
I mean, he likes theater, but I think that not to the extent that I do. So yeah. But he also he was like, it was fun. What's wrong with you? You're too critical. I'm like, did you see the same show I saw?
I mean, like, the whole idea of putting people on stilts in the first place is like, what? I mean, it's like Heelys in Little Mermaid. You're like, okay.
Exactly. I mean, it seems more like a gimmick than anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the show that sticks out as the one where I was like, what the hell is going on? Also, Dirty Dancing, the musical.
I saw that.
Yeah.
It wasn't a musical. I mean, it was the experience of seeing Newsies, but for like 40-year-old moms. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like their kind of big girly moment.
Yeah. Well, the thing that was so interesting is that there was no singing in the production I saw.
It wasn't a musical.
It wasn't a musical.
Wasn't it just dancing?
Right? It was a play.
And a lot of times they just played the soundtrack to the movie.
And the dancing wasn't even good. Like, I think they tried to make it like very similar to the movie choreography.
Yeah.
But they had like really great dancers. Taught? Oh, of course, the main guy was great.
Take his shirt off and stuff.
Johnny, yeah.
In most of these cases, the cast isn't the problem; it's the concept and the execution. Yeah, it was something else. I remember the performance I saw. The woman who was playing, I don't know the character's name, but she's playing the blonde
baby.
No, not the lead character, the one who's like the love. She's like the blonde, pretty, traditionally pretty
right,
blonde.
Right.
Oh, yes, the girlfriend-ish.
Yeah. She was dancing and her wig flew off her head in the middle of the scene. She whipped it off her head.
Of course, Dirty Dancing. You gotta throw your wigs.
Zan, I saw that show with Cynthia Ahrens and she loved it.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, my grandma would love that show.
Yeah, I mean, I have no, like, if you love that production, if you love any of those, whatever, that's great. I like a lot of crap myself. And
it's a nostalgia show.
It's just like, what is the intent they're trying to do? And it just seemed cheap. It seemed lazy and cheap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were just playing capitalizing off the name.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, what is a musical or play that you think should be revived, should be brought back?
I would love to see, in terms of a musical, I would love to see Kiss the Spider Woman revived.
I think they could, they could breathe new meaning into that show.
I think they could. I think there's a lot of beautiful character work around acceptance, around escapism.
Diva worship.
Mm-hmm, diva worship, exactly. And the challenge is, who do you put in that role for the Spider
Woman? F.E.J. Block, hello. Patty.
I would love to have Latina woman in the role.
Oh,
you know, someone, you know. I would love to have like I don't know, Sara Ramirez come back out of like hiding and play it. I would love to have my friend is a big fan of getting Shakira to play the role.
Which
sounds wild, but I think it could work.
I mean, she fits the character.
And she's not like a mean person, it seems like. She worked with J-Lo, and J-Lo said some mean things, but, you know, she didn't say anything back.
No, she seems like a multi-talented person. I don't think we've seen the range of her skills, or I haven't personally, but I think it could be fascinating. So
I could see it in The Round, you know, kind of like an immersive, like, Great Comet-style theater.
That would be.
Where you are sitting in the spider web.
Yeah, you're sitting in the spider web, but you're in the jail cell, you know?
Yeah.
I think a site-specific production would be really cool. I think that would be one I'd love to see a really innovative director take on and do something special with it. I also love the score to Angels, City of Angels, which no one does.
I don't know that show.
It's great. It's a Cy Coleman.
Yeah.
It's a Cy Coleman show. It's just really fun. The cast recording is one of the best out there. It's like a 1950s kind of like film noir. Oh, yeah. Very much. It's in the thing that's hard to do is like it's a two stories happening at the same time. You have the author who's writing this screenplay about, and I've never seen the show. I've only known the cast recording. I've never seen a production of it. So, because
I saw a community production of it and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Did you? I am so jealous. Oh, yeah. Like, I think they did it once in Chicago, but it's a very hard show to produce because you have half of it's in black and white, half of it's in color. Half the black and white is happening in like this movie within the play. The color is happening in real life. And then they kind of mesh.
That's hard to stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard to stage. It's hard to do. And the music, but the music is great. It's like a jazz, true jazz score that doesn't really, we don't have a lot of jazz scores on Broadway. Jazz isn't really represented on Broadway in any real way. I love jazz.
All right. All that jazz. And what song or moment or show that always makes you cry?
Really, a lot of stuff makes me cry these days. But I think the one movie that if I need to get my feelies out is the Emma Thompson, the play Wit. Do you know the play Wit?
No.
It was written, oh shoot, I'm forgetting the woman's name who wrote it, but she won the Pulitzer for it, and it's the only play that she's ever written. And it's a play about an English teacher who is diagnosed with terminal cancer, and she comes to terms with herself through the process of it. Mm-hmm. And Emma Thompson was in the film adaptation that was on HBO like 20 years ago. And it is such a brilliant production, a brilliant performance. People don't talk about her performance in that role, but it is one of the most brilliant pieces of work I think I've seen that I can think of that responds to me. And so I would recommend anyone watches it if they want a good cry, if they want to see like a really just well-crafted piece of work with a really great star performance by Emma Thompson.
You give some good homework, Penny Dreadful and Wit.
Yeah, but get those Kleenex out, man. It is tough. Cynthia Nixon did a revival of it on Broadway like not too long ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like a heavy material.
It is heavy. I mean, there's a lot of wit in it. The show's called Wit. But yeah, it's a lot of wit, there's a lot of light moments, but it's really around a reckoning with yourself and what have you made of your life. You know, where's your priority? And then making peace with that at the end.
All right. And finally, the grand final question that we ask of every Theater World guest is, can you recall the greatest experience you've ever had at the theater?
Well, I think up until recently, I think one of the greatest experiences I've had was, I would certainly look back at my experience at Cats when I was 11 years old, because that's one of those things that you look back on that formed you. But the one that's a new one relatively is when I went back in November to see the very first production back from the pandemic of Company. And it was a very last minute decision to go back and see the first performance. And I'm not a very impulsive person, but I was like, I can't miss this. And it was—
Oh, it was the first remarkable. Performance?
It was the first performance back from the pandemic.
Right.
Stephen Sondheim was there.
And so it was, the last show I saw before the pandemic hit was that production of Company. And then this was the first show I saw coming back. Mm-hmm. And it was just the circularity of that, like seeing that as my last thing and this kind of being my first thing on Broadway. Stephen Sondheim was there in the room. Mm-hmm. Marian Elliott, who was the director, sat across the aisle from me, and I saw her just furiously taking notes during the whole thing. So that was kind of cool to see that. Mm-hmm. And then just the whole environment of being back in the theater with a bunch of people who really, really wanted to be there and weren't taking it for granted for a moment. All of that stuff together really
made
it.
Plus Patty.
And I mean, Patty was kind of, she was great, like, but that, and the thing, the tier of things that were exciting for me that day, she was like maybe third or fourth, you know? Right. Which says a lot about that experience itself. Yeah.
And that's the magic of theater there. You know, all that things going behind scenes, on stage, off stage.
Yeah, it was just like the culmination of all of that all of that pent up energy over the past 2 years in that space. So that was really cool.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. I mean, Company is one of my favorite shows that I've never gotten to see.
I'm gonna go see it next week.
Are you gonna go see it next week?
Yeah, I just bought plane tickets like last week and was like, I need to see Company before it closes.
There's a rumor, and I don't know how true this is, but that they filmed it for Netflix.
I hope so.
I don't know if that's true.
It's too successful to not continue in some way with it beyond a tour.
Keep it alive. I mean, they have Diana on there.
I know, right? But maybe producers are scared to do it after what happened with Diana and all the Razzies.
Well, that doesn't speak to that. That Company, has nothing to do with Stephen Sondheim.
No, but that Diana thing was was unfortunate because I think it would have been a lot better if they had an audience in that recording.
But there's no audience?
There was, because they filmed it during the pandemic.
Oh.
So it's all just silence after every number. There's just stony silence.
So it just sounds like it's bombing.
Yeah, it sounds like it's bombing, but it's, you know, but I think it needed an audience to give that energy of like, oh, there's laugh moments here.
People care about this. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay to laugh at this.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Broadway Bob, for coming on the Theater World podcast. I feel like we're old friends. It's almost as if we never said goodbye.
Oh.
And give us anything you want to plug. You've got a bunch of stuff going on.
Well, first, thank you for having me on here. This has been a joy. I mean, you can find me on TikTok at Broadway Bob, on Instagram at The Broadway Bob. You can find my podcast, The Sunset Project, wherever you listen to podcasts. And I will say, you don't have to be a fan of the musical or even like know what the musical is to get something out of it. I've had a few friends who like knew nothing about it and they just got pulled into the story. Not to toot my own horn, but that's what they told me. So I'm just telling you that.
The podcast feels like a story that's just been simmering inside of you for your whole life.
Yeah.
I have people ask me like, are you going to do, what's your next thing? I'm like, I don't know.
The Cats Project.
The Cats Project. I will hit you up when I do that.
I'd love to be involved with the Cats Project.
I love it. And then I want you to do your Adam Pascal memory. That will be the opening song for it.
Memory. All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on. You can follow us on Instagram at theaterworld_readings. And you know what? Hey, you made it this far in the episode. Give us a review. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on all the platforms. Give us a review so it looks like people are actually listening to this thing.
Put those stars up.
All right. Well, we will see you next time. And Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up. Mr. DeMille, it's fading. The light is fading.
No one ever leaves a star.
Lights, camera, action.
All right, bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.